In this episode, I share about my disillusionment with corporate HR and the drivers that saw me move to Cambodia. I share the loves, laughs, and learnings from expat life and the impact my change in perspective has had on my approach to HR. Welcome to Reimagining HR with Trina Sunday, the rule-breaking podcast where we challenge our thinking and our current people practices. This podcast is for time-poor HR teams and business leaders who are feeling the burn, lacking laughs, and not feeling the love. I'm Trina, your host, and I'm here to cut through the BS, explore different ways of thinking, and create high-impact HR functions. Because happier, healthier organisations are better for our people and our bottom line. So if you are keen to flip traditional HR on its head, hit the follow or subscribe button so you're the first to know when new episodes drop. I'm here to help and also to shake things up. So let's get started. I don't think I'll ever start a podcast with a Bridget Jones reference, but Bridget Jones and Edge of Reason just came into my mind. You know, the movie where she ends up in a Thai prison? Not because I ended up in a prison, but I'm channeling the narrator voice from Sit Up Britain in my account of Cambodia. So Cambodia, the kingdom of wonder, enchants with ancient temples like Angkor Wat, vibrant markets and lush landscapes, its rich history, warm hospitality, and resilient spirit captivate visitors, offering unforgettable experiences and endless discoveries amidst a tapestry of cultural treasures and natural beauty. Sounds like a travel campaign, right? Pretty bloody good one at that. But in reality, that travel experience may in fact be marred by issues like poverty, overcrowding at tourist sites, scams, occasional safety concerns, and challenges with infrastructure and sanitation. Not to mention a recent history that can be so confronting that it can be difficult to process. So why would you go? Why did I go? I mentioned in my last episode that I'd been working in an organisation driving culture change for a CEO and exec who did not particularly care. I'm pretty sure I described the work as soul-destroying at the time. It was a toxic environment that was dysfunctional, it lacked communication, it fostered mistrust, and the exec team were prioritising personal agendas over organisational goals. It was outright thwarting productivity and impacting morale in the process. It was awful. I was extremely unhappy, but I'd convinced myself that I was covering it well in front of my team. This little 360-degree feedback profiling, though, quickly blew that theory out of the water. I swore there'd been a mix-up with the results because as an OD specialist, I did profiling assessments pretty often and I'd done this particular one before and it didn't look anything like me. There must be some mistake. Although, to be fair, my own self-assessment didn't look a lot like me either. And the impact of that situation and the environment I was in was really clear to see. So I reached out to a really trusted consultant to independently debrief me on my results, you know, so I could make sense of them. And after sharing with her my goals and ambitions in life, she broke all the coaching codes. And she just turned to me and she just said, "The fuck are you doing here?" And I was like, "What?" Couldn't answer her. But in reality, what was I doing there? Like, it didn't fit. My values, it didn't fit my ideals. And being there was meaning I was trying to contort myself into something that I wasn't, and it was taking a toll. And the team were onto me. So I took pause to reflect. I owed it to myself to do that more than anyone else. Now, I knew that Cambodia was a happy place. It always saw me return rejuvenated and reinvigorated for life. You know, it energized my soul in a way that nothing else did here in Australia. And it gave me the boosts I needed to be resilient for the year ahead. You see, I'd been doing annual volunteer trips to Cambodia, so I knew the impact of working with the Khmer people and, you know, what I could do in that space. So I started to look for pro bono consulting opportunities so that I could lend my knowledge and skills in a more meaningful way. And while doing so, I stumbled across an expired ad on LinkedIn for an organisational development manager. So I reached out to the international charity and I offered to support them with any remote consulting if they needed any assistance. And the contact person asked if I was keen to chat and explore the idea of moving to Cambodia for a couple of years. You know, I told them they were crazy. You know, like in my mind, it was booming in Western Australia. I was at the top of my career and earnings and I was in the process of doing a property development. You know, that's a lot of money going out and no money coming in. There was no chance. But I figured, you know, there was no harm in having a chat, right? Just to find out a bit more. So I did. I was intrigued. So I figured, well, there's no harm in doing the math, you know, just to find out if I could survive the 2-year term financially if I did it. All things being equal, it looked like I could survive it. Just. And then I turned on the TV that night as I considered this crazy move to the Kingdom of Wonder. And on the project that night, just as I turned on my TV for the first time, was Scott Neeson, the founder of Cambodian Children's Fund, which is where I'd been talking about going to work. He was the Aussie Hollywood executive who'd left his career to rescue children from poverty and exploitation. You know, who's providing education and healthcare and giving them hope for a brighter future. It was the epitome of serendipity. Oh, great rhyme. But the next night, I spoke to my potential boss, Scott Neeson, and the day after that, I resigned. And then a few days later, I told my parents. And 5 weeks later, I was living in Phnom Penh. It was 2014, and life as I knew it had been turned on its head. In the 2 years I worked at Cambodian Children's Fund, I was nothing short of impressed at the programs, the passion, and most of all, the people. Extraordinary people, united in a common purpose to transform lives. And I was so honoured to be a small part of it. And I still am, as an active sponsor and an advocate for young girls who have faced unimaginable challenges. My heart will always be in Cambodia because those girls are in Cambodia. When I finished my 2-year contract with CCF, I wasn't ready to return to Australia. So I remained in country and I started freelancing in Southeast Asia and Australia. Cambodia was a cheap base, flights were economical, you know, I welcomed the travel and the diversity of cultural and organisational experiences. I'd built a super bland and corporate brand back then, trading as 4C Asia Pacific. The 4C stood for, see if I can remember, consulting, coaching, capability, and collaboration. The latter picked up all the random projects that were off brief, yet captured my interest. Things like street art tours and female empowerment. My first board role actually was with the first all-female contemporary dance company in Cambodia called New Cambodian Artists. And they address social and political issues. They push the boundaries of what it means to be a woman in Cambodia and as artists. Their storytelling is super powerful. And with the guidance from their Dutch creative director, Bob, they have created something truly incredible, a space for storytelling and sisterhood and solidarity. But it's come at a cost. You know, they've been blacklisted in Siem Reap. So now they're taking on the capital and it's been phenomenal to see their work recognised internationally. And I am in awe of their aspiration to create more contemporary art pieces to challenge gender-based norms. It is so inspiring. I'll share their details in the podcast notes, but think bold and provocative productions tackling societal taboos and political realities. You know, they're brave and talented women making a real difference to the artistic landscape in Cambodia. And you might wonder what all this has got to do with HR and what is she on about. But the systems that create and support gender biases are alive and well in our organisations. Yet somehow we continue to try and fix women. There's something to be said for biases and corruption that's visible. You see it for what it is, you can tackle it, you can see how to address it. But when you're in a country or an organisation where we don't acknowledge social issues or organisational issues as openly, how can we collectively work to address them? That's our opportunity. Living as an expat in Cambodia shifted my whole perspective on life in a few different ways. You know, the first would have to be obviously around the cultural richness. You know, experiencing a vibrant culture so different from your own just broadens your understanding of diversity and tolerance. You know, it fosters this connection and enriches your experiences. You've got deeper understanding and empathy. But it's also, you know, it inspired me to have kind of a really profound sense of belonging amidst all of these differences. There was an inclusivity and a welcoming nature to the expat community where it's like, you're isolated, let me bring you in. And it categorically changed the way that I looked at workplace culture and the missed opportunities in Australia, especially to experience and celebrate Indigenous culture. You know, an obvious one as well would be around economic disparity. Obviously, witnessing varying levels of wealth and poverty gave me gratitude and empathy and altered my look on materialistic possessions and privilege. You know, the bogan in me has always rated a Commodore over a Porsche. But the level of waste we create and throw away in the Western world is mind-blowing. So I'm not really impressed by people who flaunt their wealth, especially fast cars. You know, but there's a repurposing and resourcefulness in developing nations that is so impressive to watch. And to be honest, I met some of the richest people in the world in my time in Cambodia. Obviously not the Khmers. It was people coming globally to Cambodia to make a difference. And for these really special people, some of them who are the most wealthy, you wouldn't even know they had a dime. They were quietly using their wealth to change lives. They were flying under the radar with no expectation of fanfare or fuss. They just wanted to use their wealth for good. And it fundamentally changed my perceptions of rich people, who until then, to be honest, I judged pretty harshly. You know, I'm now not ashamed to say that I want to create significant wealth because I know how much more of a difference you can make if you have it. And in my work with Cambodian Children's Fund, I watched them transform thousands of the most impoverished kids into tomorrow's leaders. They were taking kids living on rubbish dumps in Steng Mon Sheh and giving them education and food security, healthcare, shelter, opportunities. You know, and they've been doing it for over 20 years now, having been funded by Scott Neeson in 2004. And together with his country manager, Kram Sokchanern, they have built and manage a holistic care model that addresses all the barriers that keep the kids out of school. It's game-changing, and being a part of changing lives is life-changing. And many of the staff had come through CCF as students. They'd come from nothing and then chose to give back as teachers and employees in their chosen fields. And it's my appreciation for serving others that was fully realised in my time in Cambodia. You know, I would undertake kind of staff leadership development training or do different initiatives. And often I'd get back to my desk and there would be emails waiting for me that were just filled with joy and gratitude, with some telling me that working with me had changed their lives. I'm not very good at taking compliments, something I'm working on, but it is very humbling. And so when you then look at your time delivering forced leadership training in Australia, you're often faced with ego, you know, and sentiment like, I've been a senior manager for over 30 years. What could you possibly teach me about leadership? Well, some emotional intelligence would be a good start. But you can see how the Cambodian experience for me was steeped in joy and happiness because there is a thirst for learning and growth in Cambodia that I've never seen before. So my ability to make a real and sustainable difference was visible from the get-go. And a warning for anyone interested in joining one of my Cambodia leadership experiences, prepare to be sucked in. You will be absolutely sucked in. It is life-changing. All your money back. But one of the biggest perspective changes is really also around resilience and optimism. You know, observing the resilience and positivity of Cambodian people in the face of challenges inspires a newfound appreciation for life's simple joys. And the power of perseverance. Despite scarce healthcare and pervasive mental health stigma, you know, Cambodian people exhibit remarkable optimism and resilience, and it's rooted in the history of overcoming adversity. You know, their strong communal bonds and cultural resilience, it empowers them to endure and persevere through challenges. The Khmer Rouge and the genocide in Cambodia was in my lifetime, just. It was 1975 to 79. And, you know, it led to mass killings and forced labour and societal collapse, you know, millions of deaths. They targeted intellectuals, ethnic minorities, religious groups, creative thinkers and artists of all kinds, and anyone perceived to be enemies of the regime. Women, children, you know, specifically targeted to eliminate perceived threats and to help them reshape society according to their radical ideology. And there's not one Cambodian I have met in the 15 years that I've been travelling there that hasn't experienced direct family loss. You know, and the devastating loss of life significantly reduced the population's median age and it decimated an entire generation. Entire generations. You know, when I lived in Cambodia, 60% of the population was under 25 years old. Today in 2024, I think the median age is about 27. Like, think about what that means in Khmer organisations for a minute. Professionals who were alive in the late 70s were unlikely to have survived, unless they're part of the regime. So professionals in the country now would have been born since that time. They would be in their mid-40s at best, like me, noting that the bulk of the population's in their 20s. And I don't know about you, but I learned a lot from those older than me in all of the organisations where I've worked, even if that's what not to do. You know, imagine going through your career with nobody to learn from, like nobody to look up to, just books, your studies, the internet. It's why professionals in Cambodia have such a genuine appetite for mentorship and guidance, because they don't inherently have it available to them. Who knew that having crusty old leaders was a privilege? You know, and I'm more acutely aware of my white privilege now than I've ever been. So, you know, you can keep your fancy cars and your misery. The happiest and the most generous people I've met are those who have got the least, yet they know what's the most important. And that's namely relationships and connection to community. And I know how powerful being a part of the Cambodian, you know, the Khmer community can be. And Reimagine HR is here for it. Michelle Obama was in Cambodia in the time that I was there to support the Let Girls Learn initiative. And, you know, she said, choose people who lift you up. And Khmer people had a way of lifting me up like no other. And that's what I want to do for my HR colleagues who might feel like they're drowning under the weight of workload and expectation. Like, us HR professionals deserve to be happy too, you know. And the happier and more valued we feel, the more influential and impactful that we become. True story. Like, I know now that happiness is a competitive advantage. There are key aspects of that that flow into my work on employee engagement, both as a concept and a metric in our organisations. And I'm not talking about the happiness indices either. I'm talking about leaning into the research and the work on happiness and the principles that fuel success and performance at work. You can check out Sean Achor's book, The Happiness Advantage, if you want to unpack it more. But we're always told to work hard and you'll be successful. And if you're more successful, that you'll be happy, right? Well, recent research in positive psychology has it the other way around. Happiness fuels success, not the other way around. Happiness fuels performance. Happiness fuels success. So now that I've found the sweet spot and I'm happy in the work that I do, success has followed. And that's what I'm seeing happen with the people that I'm working with, especially my coaching clients. And if you do happen to be a leader in your field that's looking to get inspired and give back, then the Cambodia Leadership Experience will be a game changer for your career and your soul. So you can contact us via the website if you want to learn more. In my next episode, I return to Australia with a partner, a pregnancy, and a renewed passion for doing HR differently. But it didn't go quite as I expected. Turned out there hadn't been much evolution in HR in the 4 to 5 years I was away. Imagine that. Thanks for tuning in and leaning in to this week's episode as we look to reimagine how we show up for our people, organisations and community. Reach out to us via our website at reimaginehr.com.au with your HR horror stories or suggestions of people you'd love to hear from or topics you want to explore. It's all about people, purpose and impact, and we are here for all of it. Until next time, take care, team.